It's hard to believe that it's been 1 year since we started recording this podcast. We'd gone back and forth for a little while about doing one, but it took one final push from JP after a sim one night for us to finally get going. We weren't sure when we started if anyone would listen. Last season, we had our ups and downs in our golf game, but we had a great time making this podcast. We want to take a moment to thank our amazing wives who have supported us while doing this. For my wife in particular, thank you for letting us take a room in our house, for the recording equipment, and for taking care of our kids while I go play a silly game where I try to hit a ball in a hole.
A huge thank you to my lovely wife for her tremendous patience with my dumb hobby. Thanks for the time. Thanks for the understanding. Thanks for the giant bag of really expensive sticks and the trips and the snacks and the Sims. But mostly, just thank you so much for being you.
And thank you to my wife, who, no matter how much she doesn't personally care about golf, will still get excited when I get excited about golf. And that means the world to me. Thank you so much.
Finally, thank you to the fans who keep listening. You're what keep the mics on. Together, we are For the Record.
Golf, the hardest game we love to play. These are the ramblings of three nerdy golfers.
Our continuing mission? Explore strange new swing techniques to seek out lower handicaps and awesome golf courses.
And to boldly swing where a safe layup would have been the smarter choice.
Welcome back to another episode of For the Record, and by golly, we got a special one for you today. Can I have a short honesty moment in the middle of this intro?
Yeah.
Because this is episode 25 and officially marks a year of us doing the For the Record podcast.
Woo-hoo-hoo!
I was not sure if we would ever get to this point when we started.
I know. I wasn't sure if we'd get past, I don't know, five.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
When we initially set out to do this, we're like, we don't know. We don't even know if we're going to like this. We don't know. I quite enjoy it.
It's a lot of fun.
It is a lot of fun.
It really is.
So sticking with us as we reminisce on the past year and talk about our podcast-iversary. And, of course, we've got to talk nerdy to you.
Happy podcast-iversary.
That's totally a word. We didn't make that up at all.
Nope. And we've got a what's in the bag along with a very special birdie bev.
Mm-hmm. A very special birdie bev.
Provided by Cody.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So
is it blue? Tell me it's not blue.
It's not blue. It's not zombie. It's not anything weird.
If you don't know what we're talking about, go to our last show. It was a little interesting. We'll just leave it at that.
Yes. I'd like to point out that I think I had the most accurate rating on that birdie bev, and I think everybody else's as the evening wore on. It went down.
It was the gimmick of it that got away, that gave it away. That without that, it would have been garbage. But
yeah.
That's true. It had a great bottle.
Yeah.
But let's start off with our 1 year of doing a podcast. It is not the first year since we've been playing golf.
No.
I tell you, sometimes it feels like it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't know. What was your favorite moment in the past 12 months? And that is a heavy question.
Specifically podcast-related moment, though.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
I'll go first. For me, it was the hole nine on our home course when we all three parred. And then we got to talk about it later. That was just a special little bit of time for us together as a group.
That is a good, memorable moment. Because usually when we play, one of us does quite well and the other two don't. Or if two of us are playing well, usually the third is just not in it, right?
Any specific hole. Any one of us will get a par, a birdie, and a bogey. When the stars align, that we're all on the same score is very rare.
Yeah. There was a brief moment where the universe let us imagine a world in which all three of us are competent golfers capable of making par, which is the expected score.
And as soon as that moment came, it was ripped away from us.
And it was gone. But it was a glorious moment.
We've parred on other holes are less tricky, but that one is a very tricky one. And I don't think we've ever even come close to the same score on that.
So hole nine on our home course is a par three, 180 yards, on a decent day.
Yeah.
Sometimes it'll get down to like 170, but
I don't think the distance is what makes that hole hard. Let me paint a more detailed picture for our listeners. It is a wicked turtleback green. And when I say it's turtleback, the slopes off of it, particularly off the backside, if you go off the back, you're dead. The back edge of it.
And it's narrow.
The back edge of it, as well as the left side, are protected by pine trees that are extremely advanced in age, meaning they have many, many branches, and those branches are thick and unforgiving. And if you know anything about the way pine trees grow, the foliage at the bottom is pricklier than the foliage at the top.
Yeah.
And those bottom branches are prickly. You find yourself in those branches, it hurts. It's physically painful to get out. If you go long and right, there's more trees that are slightly less mature. The only miss on that is dead straight short or slightly right short.
And
slightly
it's
right or slightly left short, you're dead. Anything long, you're dead.
And it's such a hard green, like firm-wise,
yes,
that if you land on it, it rolls off every time. Yes. You have to land it short
and then
it roll off.
And then the other thing to know is that as far as the size of the green, it is microscopically small, particularly in its depth. Mm. It's probably only
15 feet?
Maybe 20.
Maybe 20
maybe
feet
yeah,
wide.
15, 20, yeah.
And on a par 3 that can play 175 yards, that is not wide enough. And so for a long time in our state, the state of Utah, that was ranked the most difficult par 3 hole in the state of Utah for a long time.
I believe it, especially if you're playing from the tips. That
it's
is a tough,
insanely
over
difficult.
200
yeah,
yards.
Yeah, the tips. No, it was more like 250.
Yeah, I said over 200.
Yeah, well, yeah. Technically you're right. But there's a difference between 200
and 250. It was a million yards.
Over 200.
Technically correct.
Very, very
but
far.
The reason for those pine trees on the back behind the green is because behind it is hole one perpendicular the green of the hole nine. So I think they're trying to use those trees as kind of like some blocking.
Yeah, some protection.
And I don't know. It's just a tough hole. But that's a good memory.
I don't think anybody's going long enough on that hole to put the people on the first tee box in kind of meaningful
danger. I've gotten a couple on
that. Having been said,
I have
seen some people on the first tee box who think they should play the tips, who shouldn't be playing the tips, and who do hit hosel shanks bad enough that it might put the people on the green on the ninth in danger.
Well, I think they're just going for a hole in one, and that's probably the closest hole to
it's the closest hole to the first tee box.
Towards
is
the end
the
of
ninth green.
Towards the end of the last season, we played with our fourth over hit and went past those pines behind it and nearly hit people
it's
needed.
That's an awesome idea though. Why didn't I think of that? Par five. Geez, look, it's right over
there's
there.
There's one just there.
That doesn't look like that's a par. That's the easiest par five ever. I just got to get over them trees.
Just a 30 yard.
Have you ever played golf with friends?
Yeah. Yes.
And so it's like a mini golf game on just about all the platforms. And it's set up that way. It does not matter what hole you get it in. You just have to get it in a hole.
You're kidding me. I didn't know that.
And so a lot of like the speed runs and things that the crazy people do, they'll aim for not even the intended target because it still counts. Like the programming in the game is just that, nope, sure, that's a golf hole. Why
not?
That's
hilarious.
Does it matter sequentially?
No.
Like if you get all 18 or does it just, like if you get to the 8, if you make it into the 18th from the first one, does it just skip to the next?
No. It just counts as you hold out on hole one.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's
kind of funny. John Paul, what's your memorable moment for the year?
You know, we played a lot of great golf, and so it's hard not to say golf. Can I do two? Am I allowed to do two that are runners up?
Sure.
Okay.
What are you going to do if I say no?
I'm going to say 10th hole Wasatch Mountain tee shot. Was magnificent. We were on a golf trip up near in the north part of our lovely state, and it was a beautiful Saturday. It was sunny. We had a great fourth that we were playing with. We were on the 10th hole, and I got to tell you, it was look, there's a picture of it right behind Eric on the wall.
Yeah.
There it is. It's a 10th tee box on Wasatch Mountain. It's such a good view and such a great day and such a good course. It was just very fulfilling. Just a wonderful moment. But my favorite moment probably has nothing to do with golf. On our recent end-the-season golf trip, the end of our regular season, Eric went to great trouble to hook up essentially this studio in his car.
Oh, yeah.
And we had a recording session driving down there, which I think was spectacular. It is a really fun episode. So if you haven't had a chance to listen to it, go listen to it. But particularly, we tasted some pickle candy roulette thing.
Gross.
That was so bad.
It was awful, but it was also so funny. It was like everything that I hoped we would get out of this podcast, like condensed into that moment. It was a very fulfilling moment.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you remember this, John Paul, but in our friendship several years ago, back way before even the podcast was even in the inklings of our imaginations, I said a quote to you that it just off the cuff made up somewhere. And it was after we had gone boogie boarding in California in averse conditions.
Boogie boarding.
Yeah, but it wasn't
it
in
ruined your body.
It wasn't one of those nice beaches where
it doesn't matter.
You know, it was terrible and harsh, and you and I were the only one that did it. I don't think you did it, Eric.
I did. I went in with you. I've boogie boarded with you every time we've gone.
Have you?
Because I wait a little while, but I always go.
I remember that we were thrown about, rashed up, and really sore.
Bleeding
and
you're
just
there.
Like, I can't believe we just did that. And I said, well, what are friends for if not to do stupid things with you?
Yeah. I remember you saying that.
Oh, I lost a boogie board. I lost one of my good ones on that trip. I snapped it in half.
Yeah, yep.
Because it was so rough.
I got to buy a new one. I snapped my other good one last trip. Like, I need it. Listeners, if anybody knows a bodyboard that's reasonably priced that doesn't break.
Exist.
I don't know. I kind of think you just pick up whatever's cheap knowing that it's going to break
knowing
or
that
get
it's
lost.
Just gonna disintegrate.
Yeah. We don't get to go enough that I don't think that's worth an investment, you know?
Yeah.
I don't care. That is probably one of my favorite activities on planet Earth. I love boogie boarding so much.
You do.
I will go in any condition. In fact, Rachel and I were driving in the northern part of California in like December.
Okay, still cold.
Very cold up there.
People think California, lovely year round.
I got out my boogie board and I ran to the beach and there were people walking their dogs up and down the beach in like coats.
Yeah.
And they were looking at me like I was the craziest person in the world. And Rachel's like, this is a really rocky beach. Do you really think you ought to do this? And I was like, I'll just ride it a couple times. It'll be fun. I'll never forget myself if I don't at least try and ride one wave while I'm here. We rarely see the ocean. I ran out there. The very, very first wave picked me up, smacked me down on very unforgiving rocks. I was bleeding in many places. I was frozen to the bone, completely demolished. My board had broken free of its tether and was some ways away, and I had to go fetch it down further on the beach. And I walked back up, and Rachel was like, did you have fun? I was like, shut up. Shut up.
I'm sore and I'm hurt. It was a bad decision. Leave me alone.
I'd have done it again.
Yeah. What's yours, Cody?
So I've been thinking, it is so hard to pick a single instance, but I've got two as well.
Okay.
One is more group related, and it was on our home course on hole 15 on the back nine. And it was when we all three hit the green and mimicked our logo.
Oh, yeah, that was cool.
Oh, yeah, that was great.
When we had the three balls that landed right on the green, the flag was off to the left.
Pretty much exactly that.
As we were walking up and we're like, hey,
look at that.
That's our logo. I thought that was really special.
Yeah.
The second one is just kind of a more personal one just because I felt really good. And it was when we played up at Sky Mountain, and when I birdied that last par five, and had a really good score, that felt really good.
Yeah,
and
it was really
was
good.
A highlight of my year for sure. A year of trying to be a better golfer, culminating in that was a good experience.
In actually
for me.
Being a better golfer.
Yeah, that's
great. Eric, we each took two. Do you feel ripped off? Do you have a bonus one?
Let's see. Okay, so this one's also not golf related, but when we went and saw Tron Ares, that was special. We went in with low expectations and we got the fancy seats and kind of spoiled ourselves, and it was just kind of fun to hang out with you guys and do something
that
fun.
That movie's so good in D-Box.
So what you're telling me is that our best and favorite memories are not necessarily golf-related.
Well, I mean,
mine happened to be, but...
Yeah,
that's all right. That's part of what makes the game great, right?
Yeah.
That's true. It's been a good year.
It has.
Looking forward to this upcoming year, and as part of that, we had talked a little bit about our off-season competition.
Yeah.
We gave a pretty detailed check-in last episode of how that worked out. So I don't think we need to dive into that other than I've been keeping an eye on the chart and it seems like we're all doing pretty well.
Yeah.
My body is more sore than it's been, which I'm taking as a good sign. Mm-hmm. But I think we did want to pick, we haven't finalized any of our golf trip locations, but I think we should give a sneak peek of maybe what some where people are thinking. What are your top tiers? Where is your mind going?
Okay.
And we're not deciding right now. This is not a decision or final. We're talking out loud.
I suggest we start at the bottom tier and each speak for each tier rather than one person sharing their entire list.
Okay. That's fine. Because the reason why I was only focusing on the top tier is because we are nailing it out of the park.
I know. But I think it's important that we review all of the tiers to motivate ourselves.
Okay. Then, John Paul, let's follow that pattern then. Let's start with our bottom tiers.
I started last time.
Where are we going?
So
if you had to pick.
I was thinking about this, and I feel like the bottom tier should still be a fun day. It should still be a
It's
fun...
not going to be the worst course that we can find.
No, I'm not going to pick the worst thing that we could do. But
what was that one that Bob does sports ghosts to?
Oh, where he tells, Joey, tells Joey they're going to Torrey.
Yeah.
So mean.
I've rewatched that. I love that episode. I submit to you that there are worse golf courses here than that, and I've played them.
It looked pretty bad.
It was pretty bad.
I don't know. I know a couple around.
When I'm having a particularly bad day, I watch that episode just to pick me up because I laugh so hard every time.
Go ahead, John Paul.
So bottom tier, what I would love to do that I think would be an interesting trip, and I think it would actually be a good gauge for Cody and myself, not so much Eric because you are not familiar with it at all, but there are 27 holes at Stonebridge.
There are.
And it's a challenging course. It's not as good as our home course strategically, I don't think. It's a lot of pound driver.
Yeah.
It's
driver iron.
The par fives have some forced carries that make them almost needlessly punishing. Where you literally, even if you're laying up, it's a challenge to carry the last shot. And so I think, because we golfed this a lot before we started the podcast, back when my work schedule was different, your work schedule was different, and it would be interesting to go back with the skills that we've developed, the new equipment that we have, and see how we stack up to what we used to be. But I think it would be fun to go there, just get a cheap hotel room nearby and run that through. We could even commute in if we wanted to save some dough, but... It would be fun to play Stonebridge all 27 or perhaps two sets of 18s across 2 days, but try and get all 27 different ones.
Okay. That is way more fun than anything I had imagined because I figured that the lowest tier was kind of a punishment.
No, it should still be fun, right? It should still be enjoyable.
Then I'm going to flip-flop on the fly then.
Okay.
I'm going to flip-flop.
Do it.
So my suggestion, and you can tell me if this is too far out of range. Because I think the idea is our lowest tier is we can't leave basically the Salt Lake Valley area, right? And how is Mountain Dell too far? Up Parley's just a little bit.
That's a nice course. That's a tough course.
Yeah, and it's fun. I've played it and great course, fun.
I played it once, but I was really terrible at the
time.
But
I would still call it kind of local.
Yeah.
You know?
I think that's fair.
I would agree. I think that would be considered a local course. It's less than an hour drive from where we
are. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. Okay.
So
then that would be mine.
I have a little presentation with mine.
Wow.
He's put together on his laptop, ladies and gentlemen.
Imagery to go with him.
That is so great for an audio-only format.
I know, but I wanted you guys
to inform us.
Okay. Yes.
I'm drinking it in with my eyes.
Yeah, I did a lot of research on mine and looked for ones that were not just challenging, but beautiful.
Should we do one of those assisted hearing or things where like a golf course overlooked with a drone with a lake in the middle with a water fountain shining up the middle with a fairway to the left?
What appears to be the Wasatch Mountains are in the back corner.
Yeah. So this was one that's like the top rated in Salt Lake Valley for value and beauty. It's called Eaglewood, and it's in Bountiful.
Yeah, Eaglewood is, I have never had the privilege, but it is well-known
among
golfers. Yeah, for sure. If we wanted to hit a 1-2, the Ridge in Bountiful is also a lovely course.
The Ridge is in West Valley.
No, there's one called the Ridge Bountiful.
When I was looking,
it's up there as well. Close. And they used to give you a free run on your birthday.
Oh,
so yeah. I would go on my birthday and golf there with Rand. But yeah. So
how many birthdays can you have in a year?
They checked your ID. So just the one.
How
on
many
your
IDs
driver's
can
license.
You have in a year?
that could be a really fun 1-2 punch.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, yeah. I like that. And Bountiful's in striking distance. Yeah. I think that's fair.
45 minutes away.
So do we get like a bonus? If we do the top tier, we get a top tier plus the local tier?
Not when you hear what my top tiers are.
Oh, gosh.
All right. Should I start us off with the silver?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do it. You are ready to go.
He is so prepared.
You know why? He's doing the bronze, silver, gold because the Olympics just kicked off. He's probably like all on board. Like,
I love the opening ceremonies.
I love the Olympics.
Other than the AI bit, it was all good.
Okay. Did you watch the opening ceremonies?
Yeah, I watched half of it. Okay. I did not get to finish it.
Let me tell you, it was an interesting one, and let me see if your take is similar to mine, because I love the Olympics. I cancel whatever I'm doing. I watch the opening ceremonies. I watch the whole darn thing, including the entire parade, and I'm just that guy.
You're like, oh, they've got two people from Papua New Guinea. We're so proud of you. We watched
the whole thing.
Hey, the Philippines sent four people.
They did. Yeah, they've been represented in the Winter Olympics for the past, like, over a decade.
I know.
Good for them.
Yeah. I want them to win. I don't know what they're competing in, but I'm going to... If I see their flag, I'm going nuts. Okay. It wasn't as technically impressive as previous ones that we've seen. There wasn't any mapped projection. That's a new tech. There wasn't fancy drone work or anything like that nature. But what it was incredibly accessible. There wasn't one thing that I didn't know artistically exactly what they were trying to get across. It's the most accessible one of those that I've ever seen.
In France 2 years ago, they were definitely going for a French edge and very artistic.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Milan just seems...
I really enjoyed this one.
It was welcoming in a weird way.
I think the France one, the French one was trying to be too artistic and went more with the abstract art.
Great Britain did the same thing. Yeah, Great Britain did it at the London Games. Like half of the things you're like, what on earth is going on? Like the people who were commentating had to every 10 seconds, and this is a representation of blah, blah, blah. And they had
to
explain.
If you have to tell somebody, you're doing it wrong.
They had to explain almost nothing.
Show, don't tell.
Almost nothing. The other thing is that I watched it with my wife, of course, and virtually every person that walked on the stage, she was like, oh, that's a pretty dress. That's a pretty dress.
They were all...
Those Italians might know something about fashion. There were some good-looking clothes.
Yeah, there was.
Sorry for that tangent.
Sorry. Okay.
All right. So my silver... I know we were supposed to stay within Utah, but I figured Denver, Colorado...
I think we gave ourselves a drive limit because we said that...
St. George is kind of five-ish hours.
So I did Denver area.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's called the Arrowhead Golf Club. And it's considered one of the most beautiful golf clubs in the world.
Yes, it is. Arrowhead is well known.
It's public.
Yeah. Okay.
And it's not super expensive either.
Look at some
how much is it? Like,
it depends on when we go.
But like 150-ish, 300-ish, like
I said,
give me a range.
I don't know. Okay. Like right now it says that it's not open.
Yeah, well,
but when it opens, it's like...
Why, you mean they have
60.
Snow?
Oh, okay, that's much less expensive.
But when
than
it goes up to the summer and it's their surge time, I don't know.
Okay. Mm. No, okay. That's fantastic. And Denver sounds great. Denver would be really fun.
Yeah.
Mine's almost exactly along the same lines, because I'm always down to go to St. George, even Mesquite. We could do Mesquite one day. But I think by that same rule, if I were to draw a line between us and St. George and then take that radius and draw a circle... Glenwood Springs, Colorado has a gorgeous course in it. They've got the hot springs up there. There's plenty for the families to do.
Yeah, we were actually looking at that.
And what I think is possibly the greatest Italian restaurant that I have ever eaten at is in that city. It's the Underground Italian.
Huh.
Okay. Hashtag Anselmo sauce. Hashtag lemon pie. Or lemon cake. Unbeatable. Like... So I would go to Glenwood Springs in a second.
That's so tough. I love the endorsement he gave, Eric, but I also know what this man eats on a regular basis.
That's true.
It's...
We went there with six very good friends, So it's not like this is just us. Not you. Not you. No. 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 You were
not good enough.
Yeah, no. We went up there with six very good friends, and we went to this restaurant, and every single one of us rated it in our top five restaurants that we'd ever eaten at.
Wow.
And there were six of us, and we ordered nine desserts.
Wow.
So it's special.
All right.
I don't discount that. I was just joke making fun at your expense.
Plus, you know how sore we are after our stupid golf rounds on our golf trips. We could just go lay in the Glenwood Springs and just all the tension.
That's true.
Releasing the tension, baby.
Well, then I feel like I was pretty boring with my silver tier.
We agree. Let's move on.
I just had us picking a nice course and kind of doing what we did for our last end of season roundup. Find a couple of courses that we haven't played yet and go play a couple rounds over a couple of days.
Okay.
In St. George area.
Yeah. Okay.
That works.
Yeah.
Lead us to gold, Cody.
Okay. I've been pushing this for a while, and it's my gold tier. I would love to go to the Ozarks.
Okay. Yeah, I could see that.
And there's a lot of really nice, albeit very expensive, golf courses out there. But I've never been in really that area of the country. And there's a couple of golf courses. I think one of the big ones out there is owned by Cabela's that, like, it's every single hole is, like, next to, like, a waterfall or something.
Fancy.
It looked very nice, but also, like, very family-friendly vacation quality.
Yeah, for sure.
And so that's kind of what I was looking at.
Okay.
But let's have Eric go, because you were leading up to yours.
Yeah.
Oh, that's true. Pricey. Yours is going to be very pricey.
It's not that bad. It's not that bad.
You just told me that, like, we'll wait till you...
It's not that bad.
You're very confusing me.
All right. My gold is Druid's Glen in Seattle area. It's apparently, it's one that they've done on the tour a few times, and it's very well renowned, and it's beautiful. It's got a lot of water. And you've got a beautiful view of Mount Rainier behind you the entire time.
Okay, I golfed up there.
Oh, okay.
I've been up there. I went for a conference up there and brought my clubs, and I golfed two courses up there. One was called Wolf Mountain, and the other one was called South Seattle or the Seattle Country Club,
something of that nature. Yeah.
That is one of the best courses that I've ever golfed. It was unbelievably good. So, again, it could be a 1-2 punch going up there. But I love Seattle.
There's a lot of good ones up there. This one's about $175 a person.
Yeah. Okay. So we're not in insane land.
No, that's not bad. We've paid more when we've gone down to St. George.
Yeah.
I know. Well, yeah. I mean, that's right now.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, it's probably a bit. All right,
lead us home, John Paul.
Okay, I'm going to give you two options.
Did you already do your gold?
Yeah, it was the Ozarks.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Sorry.
I'm going to give you two options. I'm going to let you know Myrtle Beach isn't one of them.
Because you're going there.
I'm going there over spring break, and I will let you know how it is. Because
I'll let you know how one of the top golf destinations in our country is. Hey, thanks.
What about St. Andrews? I have never heard anything about how that was.
I don't think the wives are going to go for that. But let me. So Myrtle Beach isn't one, but I will come back with a report. Because if Myrtle Beach is amazing, we might have to call an audible and look at it. Okay. I will tell you, though, airfare there is not as inexpensive as I was hoping it would be.
Getting to Miami area, Florida, is tough.
Yeah, well, and the problem is I'm going over spring break.
Wait, Myrtle Beach isn't, that's South Carolina. South Carolina,
South Carolina.
Either way, getting to the East Coast is tough.
Yeah.
It's a little spendy. So I'll report on that. I have two possibilities. They're both in California.
Okay.
Okay. One is the trip that we had considered doing this year that we abandoned, which I still think would be beautiful.
That's the Redwoods.
That's to go to the Redwoods.
I thought that was in Oregon.
No, it's Northern California.
No, Oregon would just be to pay homage to our caldera, but then we would drive down the coast.
But they're very close together. So when I say Northern California, it's on the Oregon border. It's a very short drive.
4 to 5 hours.
Okay.
Yeah.
Short. Okay.
So, but golfing in the Redwoods, dream. And there's lots of golfing to be had up there. So that's not like it's the only course that's in striking distance. So, and there's so many things for the kids could do, even if it's just like, let them be Ewoks. They can just go run in the forest. They'll have a wonderful time.
Houdini!
Dude, I want to see your youngest running.
Don't tempt him. That'd be awesome.
Okay, so that's my one.
Okay, what's your other one?
My other one is San Diego.
The San Diego trip we did before?
No, because I saw a course that is considered one of the best courses in the United States. It's called Sandpiper.
Yeah.
It's down there. It, when I was talking about expensive non-peak season, it's about $200. So it's not a cheap green fee. It's not like a pebble green fee or like a sawgrass green fee, but that's no change.
I would have a hard time going to San Diego and not wanting to play Torrey again, man.
Torrey's pretty great.
I want to know how we do.
How many times in the last hour have I said 1-2 punch?
Yeah. That's true.
Torrey North, Sandpiper, that is a great week.
Don't you want to, like, so the prestigious courses that we've played again, isn't there a part of you that wants to get back to see how you do now compared to when you played before?
Pebble more than any place in the world.
Absolutely.
More than any place in the world. I had a terrible day at Pebble. I shot a 101.
I broke 100 at Pebble, and I was ecstatic.
Yeah, and wasn't.
I think that we would break 90.
I left so many shots out there. So many. Because I was overwhelmed by the plays. I'd never played on greens that pure before. Like, I didn't know what to expect. And my distances were off. You're at sea level. It really does mess with your distances a lot. But my equipment was terrible. It was just not.
I think I need a couple more years before I think I'm ready for that.
Hey, you guys know that stands. If we all get sub 18, we're going.
Okay.
Let's do it.
I need to figure out my driver.
You do. I need to figure out my putting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I got to get there. But anyway, so San Diego, Sandpiper.
Yeah.
So let's take these that we've recorded. Let's make sure that the wives listen to this episode.
Agreed.
And
they probably get votes. So here's
absolutely.
A question.
I
we have our votes thrown
consensus.
In. Are their votes worth two?
No, I don't think so. I think that their votes are worth infinite because essentially they can say no and there's nothing we can do about it.
Do you think that all three of them can come to a solid consensus together?
They don't need to. They just need to. We can tell them which one we want and then they can argue it out. But we'll do the final decision. They'll just give us a yes
which
or no.
Which one do we want? Okay. Yes.
Whichever. You have to listen to them. So. We joke about this.
I've never done that before.
We all love our wives very, very much. They are sweet, wonderful people.
Yeah.
We joke about this because
we're gonna
Eric,
so
Cody, and I can come to a decision about things very, very quickly. They can take days, and they have a lovely time
months.
Doing it, but they have a hard time actually pulling the trigger and making the final decision. So...
Yeah, there's always
but we can listen to the chaos
and
kind of get a sense. We've known them long enough that we kind of know which way they'll be leaning, and then we'll say, let's do this one, and then we'll see if we can get a yes.
So off air, can we talk a rough price point as well? That might play because
I would imagine the most expensive one's gonna be San Diego or the Ozarks.
I'm not talking about the course itself because you're talking about airfare.
No,
you're talking about hotel stay.
I'm talking about the trip because getting to the Ozarks is quite tricky.
Yeah, but getting to San Diego is easy though.
Yeah,
if
that's
you
why
drive.
Seattle you can drive as well.
You can drive Seattle. You can drive.
I was thinking if we're taking all of our clubs and our families, it's going to be much harder for either of us to take clubs on an airplane.
Oh, yeah. for sure.
With our kids and everything.
And
so.
I think driving is probably airfare is insane right now. I think driving is probably the play.
Well,
but I don't know if the Ozarks are drivable, and that's what makes that one tricky.
So I will say on my dream list, and it's not for this year, it's not even on the gold tier, I want to do Sawgrass some point in my life. That's on my list.
Yep. I'm with you. I want to do Tobacco Road at some point in my life. I've got to do Tobacco Road. That's one of my bucket list courses.
Well, it's good.
Cool.
Okay. It's time for Talk Nerdy to Me. All right. So it has been our 1 year anniversary.
Yep.
Yay. It is Halo's 25th anniversary this year. And
wow.
Yeah. It makes me feel old. I remember like the first time I went with some friends over to their house and they had an Xbox and they had Halo. The LAN party. My mind was blown being able to play that level of a game. Like, I'd seen StarCraft and stuff, like, the graphics weren't great, playing with a lot of people.
It's like an isometric, top-down view, and...
it just blew my mind how many people were able to play together. So this Talk Nerdy to Me, what was your go-to party game with your friends?
Oh, do you want me to start on this?
Go ahead.
Okay. So we used to get together in early days of LAN partying. We called them Nerdvana.
Oh, nice.
So we'd hook them all up and we'd do a Nerdvana.
Yeah.
And we, our go-to game, we had a few of them that we really liked, but the best one was Allied Assault. Medal of Honor, Assault.
Yeah.
World War II, kind of, it was, the multiplayer was very, very strong on that game when it came out. It was reliable, it glitched rarely, and it worked well on the variety of machines that we were using.
Mm.
But what we used to do is there was one map, I want to say Stalingrad was the map, but it was essentially like a three-story set of buildings that were a square. So it was like three stacked squares that you could run around in, and then you could shoot across the openings on those squares, but there were like back ways to get in from buildings to the other buildings. And we would play that for hours and hours and hours. And actually, at times, we would get tired of people, you know, using shotguns or anything like that. So we would call nothing but pistols. And so you could only use pistols. And so we'd sneak up on each other and pistol whip each other in the back of the head. And it was a winner. It was a good one.
Nice. Looks like you're still thinking, Cody, so I'll go with mine. Mine was Halo. That was my go-to with my friends. I got very good with a specific combo, battle rifle plus the plasma pistol.
Mm-hmm.
I got so good at the point where I'd release the plasma pistol and I'd switch weapons, and as it hit you, boom, your shields were gone and I hit you in the head.
Yeah, I used to hate people who did that to me.
I was so good at it. We'd play... years later, I went and played. We had one of the places that I worked during lunch, they hosted their own Halo server. And so during lunch, we'd all get on and play. And whenever they'd pick that, they're like, Eric wins every time.
Yeah.
See, I would just grab a Warthog and just drive across. Because we used to play a lot of Capture the Flag.
Oh, we'd always do Blood Gulch.
Is that the one where...
It's just the two.
The two, yeah. And you could hop in a Warthog and just drive across. And that was a game where the steering of a vehicle is very different than most games at the time.
Yeah, it was a little touchy.
And so once you figured it out, though, it was nice because then you could just run into people.
But if you have a BR, and you can still take people out with that combo.
Because
it takes, even if you're in it, it takes out your shields, and then you can just one-shot them in the head.
Wow.
Hmm.
So we did play a lot of Halo at LAN parties, and you know, we just show up late at night, and like upstairs we got the one Xbox and downstairs we got the other Xbox, and we'd have how we'd split the two teams. But we would spend a lot of time with my friends playing Unreal Tournament.
Oh, really? Unreal Tournament was so good.
I never got into that.
I have a funny Unreal Tournament story.
So what I was, Eric was like, I don't think you're ready. No, I couldn't remember.
Gosh, that was a good
the only
game.
Thing I remembered in my head was multi-kill.
Kiltacular.
Gosh.
And yeah, we played a ton of that.
Game was so good.
But like, I have so many fond memories of playing games with friends, because like even local co-op, we'd play a lot of Mario Party on the Nintendo 64.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and I'd play
StarCraft.
I have a twin brother, for those that don't know. And so we would be on the hunt for good co-op games.
Mm-hmm.
Some of my favorite, there was a Splinter Cell Double Agent. And that game, it gave you special points and special missions where you had to kill at the exact same time.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd be completely across the room, or like completely across a different building, and you'd have to shoot somebody at the exact same time, and you got points how close you could do it. We got it to dead on. My twin brother and I, we were so good, we could pull the trigger at the same time.
That's so cool. Okay, I got to go back to my Unreal Tournament story.
Oh, yeah, go for it.
Because I love that game. It was pretty. It was fun. It was very entertaining. I was also tragically bad at it. Like, I didn't... You know how people specialize?
So yeah.
There are guys who like to be a sniper. There's the guys who are kind of like power forwards, like hyper-aggressives and whatnot. And
yeah.
I waffled the whole time I played that game. I tried a little bit of everything and never found anything that I really was great at. And I remember one time I decided I was going to go power forward against Rand, who was also a forward guy. And I got so angry. We were in the room. He was in the kitchen, and I was in the dining room, I think. And I'm sitting there, and I went after him and came up from behind him with this scattery, shotgunny, plasma-y thing. And I just laid into him. And he ran away. I was like, how? How did I sneak up on you this effectively? And I yelled at the top of my lungs. I was like, how is it that you're not dead yet? He came around behind me and killed me instantly afterwards. And then Sam had parked himself at the spawn point, and every time I would respawn, he just sniped me in the head.
Oh, that's terrible.
It was so frustrating. And so they actually made me a T-shirt that said, how is it you're not dead yet?
Yeah, that's great. I remember when Halo 2 came out, there was a map that was a big circle.
Yeah.
And one of the first time I played multiplayer, somebody picked rocket launchers on that. And so you'd spawn, shoot, and die. Because they were just boom, boom,
I
boom,
killed
boom,
myself
boom.
Oh, with,
I love that game.
I killed myself with the rocket launcher more than I killed anybody else.
Oh, yeah. So fun.
Can we just take a minute to step back and say thank you to GoldenEye? All of these multiplayer games exist because of GoldenEye on the Nintendo 64.
Ironically,
let's
a game.
Thank all the developers that worked on all these games.
Well,
great job, guys.
Do you know the story of the multiplayer on GoldenEye? It was not intended to be a part of the main game.
Oh, really?
The developers threw it in because they thought it would be something fun to do, and it ended up being way bigger than the main campaign.
Well, yeah. Ironically, that is a game I've never played.
Yeah, a lot of people haven't, but it is it paved the way for all of these great games that we enjoy today.
You bet.
So that's awesome. But LAN gaming, in a way, lives on today.
Oh, sure.
The other week, I set up a Minecraft server.
Yeah,
that runs at my house for my son to play, and I can hop on with him, and we're playing next to each other in the same thing, and it's just awesome.
I do have to say, though, that while I'm super happy that the technology's gotten so good, you can even network your Switches, there's all kinds of things that you could do, there was a certain romance to the, like, hour and a half setup.
Yeah.
When you
yeah,
had to like
true.
Get a switch and figure out if you could get it connected to the internet and could you find enough plugs in close enough proximity to that much equipment.
Yep.
We weren't using laptops. We were bringing desktops and monitors and
well,
all
and
these things. And then you go to your car and get out like three loads of equipment to hold up your, and then you had to go back for like a case of soda and 9 million pounds of chips. And there was just something special about wasting that much time on something that nobody needed to do that was just luxurious.
And I remember trying to figure out like the best way to like make all these things portable, but when they were giant boxes. And it was just like, there's no easy way to move all of this.
No way.
People would make custom like suitcases where the monitor was attached to the back. Yeah, it was just...
Yeah, and everybody's laughing right now saying, oh, why didn't you just use laptops? No, using a laptop at one of those parties was a death sentence because the lag was so bad.
Oh, they didn't have the processing power.
They didn't have the processing power, so you would just get killed all night. Yeah. You had to have a competitive machine.
Yeah, it's true.
We're old.
Oh, yeah.
My back. What's in the bag?
Let's talk about what's in the bag. Let's have a look at the wintertime review. I was out in the garage the other day. I moved my clubs to a different bag that's easier to transport in the winter for simming. Had a good look at my sticks. And I've noticed a few things that are going to need a little bit of attention before the spring, and I've been thinking a little bit about clubs. I'm always tinkering. I'm curious if you guys have had any thoughts about anything you'd like to do to get your clubs ready for the impending, drawing very near, golf season. And is there anything that you need to maybe replace through the course of this year to help improve your game?
So I went out to get the mail the other day, and I was like, what is this unseasonable warmth?
It was so nice today. It was like 58 today.
And, I was very tempted to go golfing.
It just kind of made me think about it a little bit, and I almost have like a yearly ritual, and maybe even a little more than that, because anytime we're going to go on like a golf trip, or the beginning of the season, when my mind is on golf, I completely strip my bag and take everything out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's also the only time that he cleans the faces on his
that is
irons.
Not true. It You've looks said like that it. Before, but that is not true.
It seems that way.
I don't really clean the grooves very much in the sim, but during the course of the year, I do. Anyway.
So he says.
But I like to take everything out of my bag for the inevitable wrapper of the granola bar that I had on the course that got shoved in the back of the bag because I didn't want to litter on the course.
Mm-hmm.
And clear everything out and then put everything in nice and neat.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I am looking for anything particular to replace in my bag yet. I ended last season with my biggest need. That 58 wedge that
yep.
I got was probably my biggest need. If I was looking at anything, maybe eventually a wood, but I'm not actively looking.
Mm. You need head covers.
I have head covers.
We always need good head covers, though.
Yeah.
You need head covers that you can use.
No, I just took them off in while we do cart golf at the end of the year.
Oh, okay.
When it goes back in my push bag, I'll throw them back on.
Okay.
It's not a big deal. But yeah, that's me. That's my ritual.
For me, my ritual, I need to clean my clubs before we go out, just because it gets... I cleaned them at the end of the season. I cleaned out my bag. I just need to clean them again because we've been doing sim golf and there's just a few rubber marks on them from practice swings.
Yeah.
And then I was going to clean my push cart, get it nice and clean and ready.
Yeah. Yeah.
You going to regrip your putter?
Oh, yeah. I need to do that.
Yeah.
That's a need.
Yeah. As far as equipment replacements, I could use a 45. And
you could use a 45. That is a big gap in your bag, friend.
It is. And then if I can find one of those for a decent price, I'll just pick it up. The only other thing that I would be interested in is replacing my 3-wood.
Yeah.
Mm.
The one I have is nice. It's given to me by a friend.
Yeah.
But
he got it on a 2-for-1 sale.
Yeah, he did. But yeah, that's the only other club.
What about you, John Paul?
So there's a little bit going on there. I was looking at my clubs the other day. I think I need to regrip.
Across the board.
I'm an idiot, and I love the white golf prides.
Yeah.
And they just get manky after a while, and they do wear out. And I use the Align, golf prides, which I really like. I toy with the idea of going up to a medium grip, but I don't know if I'm courageous enough. I have quite long fingers.
Do you feel like you have good grip strength?
I feel like I wish I had better grip strength, and that's kind of why I'm wondering if the medium grips would just feel a little bit easier to control.
Get one of them on a club that you don't hit very often, like your 5-wood.
Try it for a little bit.
Yeah, but then how would I...
Oh, no, you love your 5-wood.
I love my 5-wood.
Your 5-iron?
But then how would I gauge if it's any good, because I can't hit that club worth a darn. No, it's a good thought, and so that's why I've kind of not done it yet, because
you could grab one and throw it on like a... Like one of our spare pitching wedges.
I was going to say.
Oh, like the neighborhood
birdie,
golf.
The birdie ball.
For sure.
Clubs.
That's a great idea. Yeah. And so, but regardless of if I change grip size, they are manky. It's a need. So I'm going to re grip. The other thing, and
driver's looking pretty old.
No, you guys are going to laugh your heads off at this. I also would like to replace my 3-wood, but I'm not going to replace it with another 3-wood. I don't have the confidence to hit a 3-wood off the deck anyway. I love my 5-wood and my 7. I can get them in the air way better than a 3 anyway. Where the 3-wood's handy is off the tee when you need less than driver.
Yeah.
Mini drive.
But you have to be really precise with a 3-wood. I know that sounds really crazy, and I just haven't... I've hit it off the toe a lot lately, or I just have a hard time finding the center of it. So I have this crazy idea. I would like to replace it with a mini driver.
Yep.
But there's a problem. Wow. The mini drivers...
There's only like 3.
They're quite expensive. Yeah. Like, it's essentially driver money, and I just bought a new driver. I'm not spending that kind of dough. And so my weird, coggy mind has been playing on, how do I get a mini driver without doing a mini driver? You ready for this?
Are you doing what I think you're going to do?
I don't know what you think I'm going to do.
I have my thoughts.
Let me tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to see if I can find a decent used women's driver.
Oh, no.
Because they're 3 inches shorter, which is what a mini driver is. They have a slightly higher loft, which is what mini drivers are. And they have a slightly more upright face. And that's exactly what a mini driver is. And that will give me
an... replace the shaft?
My favorite 2 fairway woods have the oldest, most flaccid ladies shafts available on the market, and I love them. And so I'm not going to worry too much about shaft or anything of that nature. I just think if I could pick one up relatively cheap, but maybe a 2-gen-old women's driver, and give it a shot, it'll give me an idea if it's something that I like to keep in my bag. And then if it's like pink or gold, you guys can make endless fun of me and mock me every time I pull it out of my bag.
That's fine.
That's fair.
That is not what I was guessing. I thought you were going to do something way crazier and get like a 3-wood head and put it on a driver shaft.
Oh. No.
And I was like, I don't
think
that
If I was
going to
do anything like that, I'd take a driver head and put it on a 3-wood shaft. Because what makes the mini driver more desirable, you don't get the same distance with it, but it's much shorter, so it's supposedly easier to control and has more loft.
What did we end up doing with that that blue?
Okay, I dug that out of the Jordan River, out of a mud bank. It's deader than dead. You get a hold of that thing right on the sweet spot in the exact center, and it goes 120 yards. It is toast.
It is.
It's a lot of fun, but it's completely toast.
You could use that.
Birdie Bev.
Birdie Bev. Time for another Birdie Bev. Ooh, that does look fancy.
All right. I have been saving this one for a special occasion, and what better special occasion than our 1-year mark?
Here.
There's been a... couple months ago, I went on the root beer subreddit and was commenting on a few things there and seeing what other people had said. And this root beer consistently makes it to the top of several people's lists.
Mm.
And I've been looking for this root beer to get ever since.
How hard is it to get a hold of?
It is easy, but expensive.
Oh.
How much? Can buy it from Amazon. The thing is, this company is only in the Midwest. So stores don't have it. Even like the artisan root beer stores and like the candy shops and the soda shops, they don't carry this. They're not an authorized reseller. But they sell on Amazon themselves and they sell it themselves. And if you could get it in stores, it would be expensive. Now add on shipping for a 12-pack of... a giant 16-ounce
tall can
that ships in a 12-pack.
There we go. We're putting it next to the A&W for reference here. It looks like it's just going to beat the A&W up and take its lunch money.
Ounce, right? And this is a 16. So
give me your lunch money.
The shipping is what gets you.
Yeah.
And I just don't know if I can justify. And my wonderful sweet wife got me a case for Christmas.
Oh. And you're sharing with us?
I am sharing.
Have you had one?
I have.
Is it? No, I don't want to know. So I don't want to know.
I'm not saying anything.
Mm-mm-mm-mm.
So how much are we talking here? You say it's
expensive. $1 million.
$20?
Like $45.
Oh.
For a 12-pack?
For a 12-pack. That's a lot for soda, man.
Yeah, it is.
Okay, I think I'm locked in. Just think about it for a minute.
Okay. I got mine.
You're locked in?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I'll tell you a funny story, though. I had to change my rating.
Okay.
Because I've been working in my garage all day rebuilding an engine, and I've been wearing latex gloves on my hands all day.
Yeah.
And I've washed my hands several times since then, but this hand still really smells like latex.
Oh, no.
And so from the gloves that I was wearing all day, and so like I was like, what is that weird note that I keep getting every time I take a sip? And I realized it was my hand that I was smelling. So I switched it to the other hand and grabbed the glass on the bottom, and it improved it significantly.
Olfactory senses do play a part in our eating, in our taste buds.
Mm.
Okay, Eric, what'd you give it?
I give it a 9.
Okay.
It is strong, and I will say the aftertaste is very smooth and very... Like I don't think I've had one that has finished quite so nicely before.
John Paul, what'd you give it?
I gave it an 8.5.
Nice.
It was not that high with the latex added, but it's quite nice. I agree with Eric. It hits nicely. It's smooth. It's got complexity in the aftertaste, though. There's a lot going on there, and it's quite pleasant the longer it sits there. But there's a... You get a little bit on the tip right at the beginning, the tip of your tongue. Which is the vanilla sweet hit, which is good. Yeah. You get the deep notes at the back of the throat, but what makes this one that higher echelon above the 8 is that in the middle between the transition between those two flavors, there's a really nice progression in the middle of the tongue that kind of burns slowly, and that's really nice.
I gave it an 8.5 as well. I was borderline 9. I really like this, and in fact... I probably am giving it down a notch just because it's inaccessible.
Yeah, you can't get it.
That's fair.
That's fair.
I know we don't normally take pricing into consideration, but this is a special one. And everyone said if you can get a hold of it, it's like their holy grail of root beers.
Mm-hmm.
And it is voted on, kind of that subreddit as their favorite root beer for root beer floats.
Oh, I'll bet that's that, yeah. money in a root beer float.
I do have a couple left that next time we get all of the families together, we should do little mini root beer floats, and we can give that theory a go. But
I'm sitting here chanting, Sunday, Sunday, Sunday. We're getting together to watch the Super Bowl. Yeah. And that would be good Super Bowl food.
What I was at 8.5 until that final aftertaste hit. I've never tasted anything like that it's with good. Aftertaste. It's really so good.
And it also does get a bump for being a bigger can, I think.
Yeah.
It's kind of fun and nice.
Yeah. That was great.
So that's good.
We never told them what root beer it was.
Well, tell them.
This is tell the people. This is a 1919 root beer.
You'll never know.
1919 root beer. They're in the Midwest somewhere, and like even if you go to their website and say like, "Hey, where can I get a hold of this?" It has like this little outline of red states, and then nowhere else.
Oh, geez.
So, you got to expand your market. I know you can get it on Amazon. It's just the shipping kills you.
Come on, 1919 people. There's a market. At least three guys in Utah would buy this root beer if you would bring it.
Utah is huge for root beer. Oh,
yeah. They would do expand very well here.
Yeah. Bring it on.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for joining us on another episode of For the Record, celebrating 1 year. That's so exciting. Yay. We are fast approaching the new season, season two. We'll have a slightly different look, a few added bells and whistles. Taking feedback from the first year, maybe change a little something, but we're not going to start the second season until the golf season is upon us, and that's about Masters weekend. So maybe one more off-season episode, and then we'll be back at it. So excited. I'm so
golfing,
excited.
Golfing.
All right.
On that note, have a good one, everyone. Thanks for coming. Cheers.